All right, we are in Jonah chapter number 4. This is our third lecture on Jonah. Let's remind ourselves that the primary attribute of God that we see in the book of Jonah is the primary. What is the primary attribute of God, Jacob?
His sovereignty.
What is an example of God's sovereignty tie in the book of Jonah?
When he commanded the fish to swallow him.
Yeah, that's one of them, but there's one even before that, Kyrie.
When he brought the storm upon the ship.
Right, when he brought the storm upon the ship. Jimmy?
Casting lots.
Casting lots is another example. There's just a series. In fact, if you read all four chapters, you would be amazed at how often you said, sovereign, sovereign, more sovereign, here it is, here it is, here it is. Every time you turn around, you see God's sovereignty there. In addition to his sovereignty, Mr. Kaiser, what else do we see about God, an additional attribute of God in the beginning of the story?
His righteousness,
his holiness, or the fact that he is just. And because he's just, this demands that what occurs? What does this justice demand?
Judgment.
What?
Judgment.
Exactly. It demands judgment. Why does just, being just, demand judgment? Why does being just demand judgment? Think about that for a moment. Why does being just demand judgment? Okay, but why? What, if someone is just, why must they judge? Okay, because they're righteous. Why is that a necessity? Okay, people would get away with anything. So in the city of Nineveh, if people were being wicked, and it is described that way, is there a possibility that innocent people were being offended or hurt because of the wickedness of people?
Yeah, sure.
Give me an example of a crime in which an innocent person experiences something because of someone's wickedness.
Rape.
What?
Rape.
Right. Another one.
A drunk driver.
Thievery.
Stealing something. Another one.
Murder.
So in all of these situations that we've just identified, somebody is experiencing pain and agony and hurt because of someone else's what? Sin. Someone else's. So if a judge is ignoring the victim of the crime, then we certainly cannot call him righteous. We cannot call him just. In addition, we can't call him compassionate. Why? Right, because he should, if he's just, have compassion on the victim of the crime. So his justice demands that sin is punished. In addition to his sovereignty and his justice, the third attribute that we clearly see, and we're going to see even more, is now what?
His mercy.
His mercy. First demonstrated upon whom?
Jonah.
The sailors. Exactly, Jillian. The sailors who don't have to die because the moment they throw Jonah overboard, the storm is calm, and so their lives are preserved. Are they pagans?
Yes.
Yes. Are they idolaters?
Yes.
And yet their lives are spared because of God's great
mercy.
His graciousness, his kind, compassionate mercy. So now let's start reading chapter number 4. Yes, Jacob. Nice and loud. Begin with verse 1.
But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was angry.
All right. What displeased Jonah exceedingly?
The fact that Nineveh repented.
Yeah, that God relented of what he intended to do. Continue.
And he prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord, is not this what I said when I was yet in my country? This is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish. For I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful.
Get your pen out and underline this. Gracious God, merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love, and relenting from disaster. Notice the attributes that are just stacked concerning God. Those are attributes, and I expect you to know those attributes. And they're all similar, and yet in order to communicate how awesome God is in these attributes, he doesn't just say, I knew you were merciful, or I knew you were gracious. Instead, he goes overboard in communicating them. Read the verse one more time, Jacob.
This is why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious God, and merciful, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love, and relenting from disaster. Therefore, now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. And the Lord said, do you do well to be angry?
All right, what kind of a party is Jonah having for himself right now?
Pity party.
Yeah, he's having a pity party. Absolutely. I mean, this is a pity party, as in P-I-T-Y. Okay? He's really feeling sorry for himself. Does he have any legitimate reason to feel sorry for himself?
Nope.
No.
And yet every one of us, whether you're almost 50 years old or whether you're 14 years old, we all are prone to pity parties. Every one of us. We can always think about how we have it worse than
someone else.
It is. I mean, that is a plague to you as a human being and to me as a human being. We compare our parents. We compare our welfare, our wealth. We compare the car we drive, the job we have. I mean, it goes on, and here he's doing that exact same thing. And you get this rhetorical question in verse number 4, and the Lord said, do you do well to be angry?
Jonah went out of the city and sat to the east of the city and made a booth for himself there. He sat underneath it in the shade, so he that he should see what would become of the city. Now the Lord God appointed a plant and made it come over Jonah, that it might be a shape over his head, to give him to save him from discomfort. So Jonah was exceedingly glad because of the plant. But when the dawn came up the next day, God appointed a worm that attacked the plant so that it withered. When the sun arose, God appointed a scorching east wind, and the sun beat down on the head of Jonah, so he was faint. And he asked that he might die, and said, it is better for me to die than to live. But God said to Jonah, do you do well to be angry for the plant? And he said, yes, I do well to be angry enough to die. And the Lord said, you pity the plant for which you did not labor, nor did you make it grow, which came into being in the night, and perished in the night. And should not I pity Nineveh, the great city in which there are more than 120,000 persons who did not know their right hand from their left, and also much cattle?
What is going on here? And that's it. That's all you get.
That's awkward.
That's an analogy.
That's an awkward ending, isn't it?
The word single book.
It's just boom. You're left with, okay, isn't there more? Haven't you watched a movie like that?
Yes.
I've invested 90 minutes into a movie, and then it ends, and it's like, are you kidding me? That's it?
Marvel movies.
And you're just done with it. What do you think about the ending? You know, what's the point of ending so abruptly like that?
There's no more.
Sure.
God.
Forward.
What?
He wants you to pay for another movie.
Right. What'd you say?
He wants you to pay for another movie.
For the Bible too.
Let's see it.
Like a beached whale.
My man, dolphin dude.
Staring right at it.
No, Tom.
That's 3.
Where is the sovereignty? Where is the sovereignty in this text? Give me some sovereignty words in this text.
God does not allow Jonah to reply.
God appointed a worm.
Yeah, God appointed. Before that, what did he do?
Appointed a plant.
A plant, he appointed a worm. So the sovereignty's all over it. So let me give you an idea of what your test on Jonah is going to expect you to do. You're going to move through 4 chapters and identify every location where you see the sovereignty of God.
Cool.
Okay? Moving through them systematically from chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4. Because this entire book is all about the attributes of
God.
God. That's what this is all about. The attributes of God manifested through this narrative. And if it wasn't for, listen to me very closely, if it wasn't for the authentication of Jesus in Matthew 12, we might even conclude that this is just a what?
A fable.
Just a story. Just a story. Because it's far what?
Far-fetched.
It's far-fetched. It's ridiculously far-fetched. And it's a great story because it has so many lessons to teach us. So many lessons to teach us. In chapter number 4, this prophet is really having quite the time that God didn't do more? Who else has such a pity party for himself after a great momentous thing? But he doesn't see a great momentous thing in a positive way. But yes, you're right. Give me another one. Mount Carmel.
Elijah.
Elijah. What does Elijah do after they destroy all the prophets of Baal?
He runs behind.
He tells God he's the only one and he wants to be killed.
Yeah, and what does God say about that?
You're not the only one.
Yeah, he said, I've hit hundreds. Stop over here in this corner. Don't think for a moment you're the only one. And here Jonah is feeling nearly the exact same way. And Jonah has more concern for a plant than what?
A lot of people.
Than people. Write that down. Jonah has more concern for a plant than what? People. Is that still prevalent today?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Let me give you an example of that prevalence today. There is presently a great concern with global warming. You're aware of that, right? There's a great concern with global warming. There's a concern to not use fossil fuels, to limit the amount of our carbon footprint. Yet, there are countries all over the world that are still living in extreme poverty. And the only way to get them out of this poverty is to bring into their lives modern living, industry, expanding the global footprint. Think about the difference between your life and the life of an American 100 years ago. The life of an American 200 years ago. You and I can't imagine every single day getting up and looking for food to eat. But what I mean by looking for is your entire day is spent on finding food to eat. Yet the reality is there's still probably a billion people on the planet that's their day-to-day existence. Heat, air conditioning, running water, washing machine, a car that drives somewhere, those things are completely foreign to them. And yet we have environmentalists today, not all environmentalists, I'm painting in a broad brush, that don't want any expansion of industry across the world because it will impact the environment. So what is the parallel that you're drawing? I'm drawing the parallel between Jonah is exasperated that the plant dies, yet he's willing for an entire city to lose their lives. Now, what is the point of the ending with regard to the 120,000? What is going on there with this idiom, I-D-I-O-M, at the end? And what is the idiom, by the way, in the text? What is it? Yes.
They were never taught the moral or spiritual.
But what's the description that the author uses?
They don't know the right from the left hand.
Right. So is that what he's really talking about, Ty? Is he really talking about they need to write an R on their thing or hold their? What is going on here?
He means that spiritual wise, you couldn't know the right from the left hand spiritually.
Is it just spiritually?
Morally, spiritually.
Are they stupid? Is that how we should describe them? Or what? What? Kaiser.
They were wicked. They didn't know the difference between right and wrong. All they knew was wrong.
So are we dealing with people who are adults and are wicked? Is that what we're dealing with? Or who are we dealing with here?
The general population.
Is it the general population?
There's not a reason to not think that.
What's that?
There's not a reason to not think that. It says 120,000 people.
Because it doesn't just say it. God said to the city of Nineveh, when you're going into a city to preach, you want to preach to the entire city. You don't just preach to a select few. You want to save as many as you can.
Right. And so what is his point with regard to the 120,000?
He's making a particular reference to the plant, which is the 120,000.
Yeah, but what is unique about the 120,000?
A lot of people.
Yes, it's a lot of people. And they haven't matured to the point of discerning. Or mentally. Either one. And what does that say to us about God?
He cares.
Does a 4-year-old understand the difference between right and wrong? Perhaps. Does a 3-year-old? Does a 2-year-old? At some point, you can say, they don't know the difference between the right and left. And then in addition to this description of the 120,000, what else is mentioned? Ty, what else is mentioned?
Cattle.
Yeah, now is this a particular reference to four-footed beasts, or is it animals?
Animals.
Of course. So we have plants, and then we have animals, and then we have people. And we have plants, animals, and people. And Jonah is ready for God to take him out because a plant died, and he doesn't care if an entire city's dogs, cats, cattle, chickens, living beings are killed or destroyed. And then what about the 120,000 who either, like, because of mental retardation or various other diseases are not able to discern right from wrong? Or what about the children born to these families at 4 and 5 and 6 years old?
Do you think that Jonah, hearing that from the Lord, would have pity on the children, seeing as at that point they could still change their lives?
You would hope that Jonah would have that on there.
Baseball team and soccer business. For
okay. Is that? I didn't get an email about that. Should I just assume? Is it going to be in 2 minutes? Is that the idea?
It's 11:30.
Okay, so I'm late.
That's okay. You found all good stuff.
All right, very good. Thank you. You can turn the recording off.